This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast.
Hey there, welcome back, nerds, to the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. It's just a couple nerds talking about nerdy stuff who happen to be bald, but you do not have to be bald to listen to the show. If you are, two thumbs up, but if you aren't, that's okay. I'm Mark Stucheski, the host of the Mark Stucheski Podcast, available everywhere. But on this show, I have a partner, and this gentleman, also a bald gentleman from, well, where are you from and how do you know me and what is your name and what is your credit card number?
My name is Dan Bornt. I am from Rochester, New York, and I know you because I'm your cousin and we talk a lot. We do this kind of podcasting together, but before this, we chatted quite frequently about all kinds of nerdy stuff, which actually elicited you to have the idea to begin this podcast to begin with.
Yeah. And I remember, how long did it take us to come up with the episode, the title of the podcast? Was it, I don't remember. That was a couple months ago.
Yeah, it was a process. However, it did, once we settled on it, we knew that that was it.
Yeah.
It took a while. Like with anything else, sometimes the names jump right off at you and sometimes you got to think about it.
Yeah, it just fits. I mean, it just fits. Two bald nerds. So last week, or the last episode, I should say, you may not be listening to these in order, I talked about solar panels. And this episode is Danny's opportunity to talk about what he wants to talk about. And he picked up something known as DIY computing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to listen to Danny's brilliance. And when I have a question, I'll jump in and say, teacher, I don't understand that. So, Danny, take it away.
All right. So, DIY computing, I should probably first define what that is. It's a term I actually made up. I don't think there actually is such a thing as DIY computing. I wanted to give a new spin on an old concept. If you've ever in yourself built your own computer in the past, repaired your own computer devices in the past, tinkered with any of your own computers in the past, that is DIY computing. That is how I define it.
So now, I got to tell you a story right off the bat here.
Go for it.
I remember when many, many, many years ago, I was still living at Rochester, New York. This had to be back in the 80s. I remember that I thought I knew what I was doing. So my then wife was working on the computer and I had taken the top off the computer while she's on the computer. And I pulled a card out. I'm figuring, you know, what's the big deal? Fried the computer. So yeah, I don't go near computers. That's why I buy Macs, so they have it factory sealed. So you don't want Mr. Productivity, that's who I am, going anywhere near your computer. So if I offer to help, make sure you say I want the other bald nerd, not you.
That's pretty funny.
Wasn't funny at the time.
Yeah, I can imagine that was not something funny at the time. DIY computing is for a certain class of people. If you are already a tinker, if you are already someone who likes to do things with your hands, then this episode is for you. We've had conversations. My cousin Mark is a very intelligent individual. He's great with productivity. He's great with a lot of the software that he uses on his laptop for doing the podcast. He's really brilliant with the business stuff. But when it comes to being mechanically inclined or working with wood, he'll be the first one to tell you. Yep. So if I repeat this, not so much. If you're that type of individual, unless you really want to dig into this, you're more than welcome. I would steer clear of this unless it's something that you're actually interested in doing. Mark obviously found out the hard way, not anything he's really interested in. So that's totally okay. If, however, you are a tinkerer or you are good with your hands, then this episode might have some valuable information. I always like to start off with answering the question, why would someone want to do DIY computing anyway? As Mark's example perfectly illustrated, there are some pitfalls to doing any of this DIY computing. If you're going to attempt any of this stuff yourself, you always have to walk in with a little bit of foreknowledge beforehand, in that if you tinker around with computers at a certain level, you could break it, like anything else that you might play with. If you start messing around with stuff, you could break it, and then that's all on you if you break it. If you're going to start tinkering, it's always important to do your homework, do your research on what you're going to be tinkering with, to understand some of the prerequisites, and the internet will always be your friend in them. There are tens of thousands of individuals and groups that all deal with DIY computing. There's this whole subculture called makerspace where individuals build stuff, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, a lot of it is electronics, but it doesn't have to be electronics. It could be building anything. But always do your homework before you actually touch any of your computer equipment. One way you can get into this is if you reappropriate old computers from people who don't use them anymore, and they were going to get rid of them anyway. That is a great place to start tinkering, because if you break it, doesn't really matter. That's how I actually got into doing some of my tinkering, is I would go out, people would get new laptops, I'd go over, I'd help them out either configuring them, show them what to do with them. They'd end up giving me an old laptop. I have a closet full of about 5 or 6 old laptops right now. And I would just start taking them apart, tearing them apart, because what's it going to hurt? What's it going to hurt if I tear apart an old laptop? But back to the question as to why would someone want to get into DIY computing? The biggest one that I think most people could probably appreciate to some extent, all of these that I'm going to talk about, everybody can appreciate. But from an environmental perspective, I will be the first one to say that I am not a huge climate science bandwagon person. I am very selective about the stuff that I believe in or read up on or understand as what is really affecting the environment. With that said, e-waste is a big deal. And there are some calculated numbers behind that. So what is e-waste? E-waste is any kind of electronic device, whether it be a cell phone, whether it be a laptop, whether it be a monitor, the webcam. It could be as big as a dishwasher. It could be your microwave. It could be an old television set. Any kind of electronic waste that when a person is done with it, they just pitch it. That ends up in a landfill. And no matter where your stance on the environment and climate science is, as a Christian myself, Mark being one as well, we are also supposed to be good stewards of the planet that God has given us. A lot of these, all of these electronic devices have heavy metals in them. They're filled with copper. They're filled with gold. They're filled with silver. Some of them are filled with mercury. Think about all the circuit boards and circuitry that's in there. All of this stuff is just ending up in a landfill. There are ways, more modern ways now, to recycle e-waste. Generally, that means taking it to a special facility. It's not something you can just dump in your recycle bin on a Tuesday morning and have the recycle guy take care of it. You have to collect your devices and take them to a spot. Here locally where we have an e-waste recycling center that's run by our county. Most of your counties, cities, municipalities will have some place you can take your e-waste. The other thing you can do with your e-waste is you can reuse it. If it's not really completely broken, let's say it's an old laptop and it's just outused its purposes for what you are using it for currently, because there's newer versions out there that run faster, that doesn't mean that the old laptop can't do something. You can set it up as a file server in your house. There's a million different reasons. I'm not going to go into all those here because I could go on forever. You can research all those. That is what I mean by DIY computing. So the environmental impact of reusing devices that normally would get thrown out can make a huge impact.
Now, I want to say something that I think Apple, you know, Danny, I'm a really big Apple fan. They've got this new program they rolled out 3 or 4 years ago. There's this machine in Cupertino that you send your old iPhones back and it actually disassembles the entire iPhone and it reuses as much as it can and it properly disposes in probably the e-waste places you just mentioned. But I think that is something I'd like to see other companies do, because they created, have you seen the video of the robot that takes apart the iPhones?
I have not. I didn't even know that existed. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, go to YouTube. I don't know what it's called. It's got some cutesy name, and what it literally does, it completely disassembles the iPhone. I don't know if it does iPads and MacBooks as well, but the point is, like, if it can take the screws and they can reuse the screws, they try to reuse as much as they can, and the rest of the stuff, they properly dispose of it. but I encourage everyone. I'll try to look it up while you're talking about the next topic on your list here, because it is a fascinating thing to see them do. And I wish other companies would do it as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark. That's great. Another reason you may want to get into DIY computing is knowing what you're getting. Now, I say that when you buy an Apple, you know what you're getting. You're getting a self-sealed unit where everything is contained. Apple controls the hardware and the software. And if you have to have that fixed, at least currently, you have to go to an authorized Apple store to have any fixes applied to it. It's a very specialized process at this point because of the way they put those, all any of their units together. And there's a cost involved with that. Generally, it's going to cost you more to get it fixed if you're not signed up for their AppleCare plan or their AppleCare Plus plan. And Mark, I'm sure, could go on about that because he just had a recent experience that I'm going to actually let him talk about in a second. However, when I say knowing what you're getting, when you build it yourself, depending on how far down you go in building it, an example would be building a desktop PC. You know the motherboard you're putting in it because you're going to buy the motherboard. You know the RAM sticks that you're going to put in it. So you're going to know the actual random access memory or the temporary memory that's going to go into it because you're going to buy that memory. You're going to know what hard drives. You're going to know how many hard drives. You're going to know any extra cards that go with it, the graphics cards, any kind of network cards that you might want to put into it. You're going to know all of the cabling that goes into it. You're going to know how much cooling you're going to put into it. You're going to know the keyboard that you're going to put on it. You're going to know all of these things because you are going to literally buy these pieces together. And then, oh yeah, by the way, they're going to come in a bunch of different boxes and you're going to assemble it like a big Erector set and put it together yourself. Again, if it's not your thing to do that kind of thing, I can understand why. But if that's the kind of stuff that intrigues you, I highly recommend trying it just once because you get to know what's in your system and you get to put the system together exactly the way that you want. The next thing on the list, and I'm going to let Mark talk about this a little bit in a second because he's going to have something to say on it, is the current climate of right to repair laws. There's a new, it's not really new, but you hear about it in the news. I've heard about it a lot recently in the news. These right to repair laws that are being passed. Matter of fact, I believe they're in the process of passing one in New York where they are going to start forcing manufacturers of products to make repair instructions and parts available to authorized third parties. And in some cases to individuals who want them, who are qualified to do repair. This goes back to companies like Apple and Samsung and some of the other manufacturers of not just cell phones, but computers in general, where it's expensive sometimes to get these things fixed. Even if you're on a plan where you're paying monthly or paying annually to say, save my Apple from my disaster that I just created it, it gets to be expensive. And there are quite a few people in the world that would like to be able to make simple repairs themselves and save themselves the cost and possibly the trip or the shipping to get a machine from point A to point B. That said, I know Mark had a recent experience where something happened to his MacBook. Thank God it's working okay. I'm going to let him explain it, but he ran into this very situation.
So two things I want to share. Number one, I cracked my iPhone screen about 3 years ago, and I debated about going to someone locally who wasn't an Apple certified repair person. But then I started doing Google research and find out that people that go to these other third-party companies, they are not Apple, and they may replace the screen, but then a friend of mine went and some parts of the screen, the touch doesn't work anymore. You go to Apple, they take it back into a clean room, they disassemble it, and they run a whole bunch of series of diagnostics on it and make sure every square inch of that screen works. So for me, it's worth paying the money to go to Apple to fix it because that's all they work on. Recently, I had a heart attack, almost went to the hospital because I spilled Diet Coke on my MacBook Pro. I did something I never do. So I normally sit out in my kitchen. I can overlook the street and there's windows there. So when it's nice, I have the windows open and I have a 16.9 ounce bottle of Diet Coke sitting right there. Never a problem. But when I get up, I always put the top on the bottle, then come back. For reasons I do not understand, Danny, when I came, because you know I texted you on this and I was freaking out. I came back and I wasn't fully paying attention. So I reached across my MacBook, picked up the Diet Coke, began bringing it toward me, and it slipped out of my hand right on the MacBook Pro. Now, I knew the first thing you do when that happens is you flip the MacBook upside down immediately, because then gravity is going to be at your side. Well, I cleaned it up, and then I had this idea. Hey, it's sunny outside. I'll go outside, let it sit in the sun for 5 minutes. So the Mac is still working at this point. It was still on outside. I'm like, okay, cool. We're done, right? Shut the lid, stayed outside another 5 more minutes with the dog, came back in, opened the cover, nothing. Now, to make a long story short, went to the Apple store. Turned out there's nothing in the keyboard. He took the back off. There's no liquid in there at all. He said, what happened is your MacBook overheated. And then when it overheats, it shuts down until it cools down. So I didn't really damage it. But here's the thing. You never know. But I went to the Apple store because the Apple store only works on Apple products. Now, I have no problem with a third-party person working on Apple products as long as they become Apple certified. I don't want Big Bubba down the street saying, I can repair your iPhone, you get the new screen replaced, and half the screen, the touch doesn't work. So, as you know, Danny, you probably know this better than I do, these things are so, when you put the screen on, everything's got to be on perfectly calibrated because of all the sensors under the screen. So that's my only issue with the right to repair. I just don't want just anybody to take apart a MacBook, an iPhone, an Apple Watch, anything. Want them to know what they're doing, because it's not just Apple. It's Samsung products and the Google Pixels. There's so much going on underneath that screen. You want to make sure the person doing the repair absolutely knows what they're doing.
Well, that is a fair point. These right to repair laws are something that are newer coming out. And what it's supposed to do is elicit some sort of competition in the space to try to drive the repair costs down, because a lot of people have complained that it's expensive. It's expensive to buy the products, and it's expensive to get them fixed when there's only one avenue to get them fixed. A lot of these companies will just charge what some people feel is an exorbitant price to get things fixed. Or they get you so that you buy into a quote unquote insurance plan. You might pay, I don't know, I didn't look up the numbers, but you might pay $200, $300 a year for AppleCare Plus on a device and you'll never have to use it. I'm not going to say whether that's right or wrong. I'm going to say you could look at it like any other insurance that you buy on anything else. You have insurance that you have to carry on your car. 9 times out of 10, you're paying that insurance every month and you never have to use it. And you hope you never have to use it, but it's there as a failsafe. This could be classified as the same thing for your Mac devices, your Apple device.
Well, I know the price for the MacBook Pro, for the AppleCare Plus for MacBook Pro. It's $300 for 3 years, $99 a year.
That's not really bad.
And here's the deal. Crack screen, $799. With AppleCare Plus, $99. If you have liquid spillage, okay, $1,500 to replace a motherboard, $299. The most you'd ever pay for a pair is $299. So I'm almost a couple days away. I'm probably going to get the Apple Care Plus, because what if I accidentally crack my screen? Now I only have to pay $99 instead of $799. But you're right. But the price is at a price point where you hope it's just you're spending money to make Apple richer. But what if? What if? Now, I don't have kids at home. But what if you crack your screen? I mean, yeah. Accidents happen. What if you're walking in the kitchen, you have a glass of water in your hand, and all of a sudden you trip on your own feet, and your glass flies in your keyboard, your screen. You didn't plan it. It was an accident. So I think, you know, I know it's a lot of money to a lot of people, but would you rather pay $99 a year and you crack your screen, now you pay $99 to fix it, or would you rather forego the Apple Care Plus and pay $800 to repair your screen? This is the choice, but I hope you never have to use it. But it's kind of like, it's a tough decision. I don't have Apple Care Plus on my phone. Maybe I should. I don't know. But this is the debate we can have and make this podcast a Joe Rogan style podcast. But I don't think we'd ever come up with an answer.
No, because everybody's going to have their own subjective viewpoint as to what is appropriate for them. And that's all we can go with. And that's the bottom line on that one. I will
Before you go to the next point on your list, I want to go back up to the robot I found. So finish up what you're doing about the right to repair. Then we'll bounce back up to do the robot, and then we'll go to your next topic.
Last thing I was going to say is cell phones are significantly lagging behind in the right to repair space because of the complexity of cell phones in general, the smallness of them versus the complexity of the components. Building your own PC is obviously much easier. You're basically, it's built in right to repair because you put all the components together. And there are a lot more laptops these days that are going the right to repair route where they're making them more modular. So it's easier for a person to repair certain company laptops by certain companies because they make them so that it's easier to get the screws out. More pieces are plug and play. So you can just order a part that breaks and pop it in. That's what I wanted to say to finish that one off.
Now, I know you have a work computer, you have a work phone. If you damage it, are you responsible for repair or are they?
I believe I can just send it to them and they have a plan that takes care of that.
Okay. Let's say you owned an iPhone 14 Pro Max and you cracked the screen and you know that Big Bubba said he can do it for $50 or the Apple Store could do it for $199. What would Daniel Bornt do?
I wouldn't take it. Sorry, Big Bubba, but I ain't taking my repairs to anybody who's named Big Bubba unless they can prove that they're now. If Big Bubba said and was able to prove that he used to work for Apple and he is an Apple certified repair specialist, Then Big Bubba might be okay on the list. But unless he can prove that for something like that, that's that complex, I'm going to go with what's going to get it fixed appropriately and properly, if that makes sense.
Right. I think people need to stop making shortcuts because if you go to somebody and they mess it up and then you have to go to Apple, now it may cost you even more money than it would have cost you if you went there because it's not just iPhones. It's any of these smartphones. You just don't open it up. There are so many teeny, teeny, tiny parts in there. You have to know what you're doing. And like I alluded to earlier, you want that phone being repaired in a clean room. So they have like what, negative pressure, something like that to keep the dust out, Danny?
Yeah. Yeah. They have like a negative pressure vacuum system that sucks all the dust out without, you know, sucking any of the components out. Very, very sophisticated system in how they put those rooms together for them to be able to work on. And there's there's very specialized equipment that they use and testing and all that kind of stuff. So the phones are a very special case because of the way that they're built. The MacBook, the laptops and things of that nature, they could probably make those a little bit more on the right to repair spectrum if they wanted to, because again, it's like a lot of other laptops where it's a motherboard and it's a sealed unit. The issue that most people have with those laptops is it's a very expensive piece of equipment to have the limited amount of upgrades that it has. I could do a whole, we've beat this conversation to death already. The performance of the MacBook at its hardware versus the performance at other laptops at their hardware are apples and oranges because Apple controls all of the hardware versus other manufacturers are kind of whatever hardware they can get. And their hardware has to be designed or is designed to run multiple things, Windows, Linux, multiple different operating systems, multiple different uses. Mac is designed solely just to run Mac. That being said, they can eke out more performance out of lower hardware than you would be able to get out of some of the other hardware from non-Apple stuff, but that's a whole other concept. So that's
I want to bounce back up to, I found the name of that robot. It's called the Daisy Robot, and it was designed specifically to disassemble iPhones. And Apple previously said the machine, this is back in 2019, it can disassemble 200 iPhones per hour. A single daily Daisy robot can recycle up to 1.2 million phones per year. I encourage everyone, go to YouTube and look up Apple's Daisy robot. It's like a minute video. It is so cool. I think you really geek out over this, Danny, because we're talking about e-waste. It literally disassembles everything, and it's got the magnets that suck out the screws. Nice. I mean, this is genius, and I think every smartphone manufacturer, they don't have this already, they should, because if you can reuse the screws or you can reuse other components, why not reuse them in new phones? Why throw that stuff away? And because Apple's like, they're really environmentally conscious, and I'm like you, you know, this whole climate change thing, I'm still not sold on it, but I think we should take care of the only planet we have.
Yep.
And that's as simple as when you have an iPhone and you're done using it or it's dead, don't throw it in the garbage can. Put it aside. Go to an e-waste. I mean, they have one in Rochester. They certainly have one here in Houston. And maybe at the center of the way, so you can go to the post office and you can send it. Do the right thing, because there's no sense throwing that in the recycle bin or the trash, because that doesn't solve any purpose. It only hurts the earth. So use a little common sense. If you can't do it for a couple months, just leave it in the drawer. It's an iPhone. Okay. It's not like a car. You can put it in the drawer and maybe you collect a whole bunch of phones and send them all at once, but don't make this excuse like it's too far away. Not saying you have to do it today, but just use your brain. Okay. Use your brain. It's just a small phone. You can wait a couple months so you get around to that e-waste place.
Yep, I totally agree. I'm totally 100% on board with what you said. Another reason that you could, that the DIY computing is nice, is that you can upgrade instead of replace. So if you think about it, you go out, you buy a laptop off the shelf at Walmart. We're going to leave Macs out of this for now.
Aww.
And the only reason I say that is because you can do some upgrades to Mac, but again, to upgrade a lot of the Mac stuff, you have to take it back to the Mac store to do it.
Yeah.
So, taking Apple out of the picture, if you go to Walmart and you buy a Chromebook or you buy an Acer laptop or you buy a Lenovo laptop or any one of those other laptops that runs the dreaded Windows software, generally speaking, if you buy that laptop, what most people do is they buy the laptop, they never do anything with it other than use it, and then they'll use it for 2 or 3, 4 years, or maybe they'll use it for 2 years. Maybe it'll start to slow down. Maybe that's an operating system problem. Maybe that's a memory problem going bad, but they never really stop to think about what the problem is. And after 2 years, instead of going through the hassle of sending it somewhere to get looked at or sending it somewhere to get fixed, it ends up in a closet, or it, even worse, it ends up in a trash can, and then they just go buy a new one. If you buy a laptop that is modular, and there's a couple of companies that make one. Framework is a good one. Or you build a desktop PC and you have it so that it's modular by design. Then a hard drive goes bad. You pop a hard drive out. You put a new hard drive in. There are easy ways. There's software on any platform to make it easy to back up and re-image your hard drive so you don't have to lose your data. And that's another whole thing. You should be doing that anyway. You should be finding some way to back up your data somewhere. Should never have just one copy of data. In the IT world, if you don't have 3 copies of your data, then you don't have 1 copy of your data. That's the saying, because you never know if 1 or 2 of those copies is either going to get lost or corrupted. Having said that, modularity. My desktop computer literally has a device on the front. It's called an IC dock that I can slide 6 of those little 3.5-inch hard drives in, and they're plug and play. I turn the computer off, I push a button, it pops out. I pop a new one in, I turn the computer on, new hard drive. I don't even have to open the case to put a new hard drive in.
Didn't they used to call in the very beginning plug and pray?
Maybe, but this thing works like a charm. Technology
this is back. Advanced. This is back in the early days, is when plug and play first came out. They used to call it plug and pray.
Yeah.
No, this sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't.
This device actually works really good. The key with some of that is every once in a while you have to clean your you have to clean it out, right? A desktop computer will accumulate a lot of dust, as will a laptop. If you look at the fans underneath a laptop or on the sides of the laptop, that dust that's in the air is going somewhere, people. It's getting sucked up in there and it's trying to get blown out, but those fans will get clogged up. So you should at least take some air and blow it into your fan vents on your laptops. I'm telling you, it'll save you a world of hurt going forward. But being able to upgrade your PCs or your laptops will save you replacement costs. It'll save you costs in the long run. You can start by building something that has X amount of capacity. And then as your capacity needs increase for what you're doing, you can add to it instead of having to go out and buy a whole new device. There's lots of benefits from an upgrade path if you're going to build your own. The last one is really the big reason to get into it. At least it was for me. And that's why DIY is all about learning. So if you're a person that just likes to learn and you like technology, then you should at least attempt to do something DIY at some point in your life. Mark is very big about finding something that you like to do or finding something that interests you and learn about it. Do what you can to learn about it. And in this case, we're talking about computing. As a nerd, DIY computing should be something that's fun. If you're into computers and you're into tinkering with your hands, and you're a nerd like we are, because we're two bald nerds, and hopefully everybody who listens to this podcast is at least a nerd in some respect, then this could be something that could be fun. Maybe you try it and you find out it's not your cup of tea, then you don't have to keep doing it. And again, there are ways to get into it for almost no cost. Find that person in your network of friends that has an old laptop sitting in a closet that they don't know what to do with, that they're waiting to take to e-waste, and say, you know, let me take that off your hands. I want to tinker with it. Then you grab that off. They don't have to worry about it anymore. You can go home and disassemble it and play with it and tinker with it and whatnot. Take it apart. Who cares? Because the e-waste people don't matter what condition it's in. You can take it all apart. And when you're done with it, you can put it in a box. And then that can go in with your stuff that you're going to take to e-waste in 2 months. It doesn't, the cost to get into the tinkering for DIY doesn't have to be that big. And it's fun. And in the learning process, I always come back to a saying. I'm not sure where this saying originally came from. It may have come from a portion of the Bible, but we've all heard some form of this. Give a person a fish, feed them for a day, teach a person to fish, and feed them for a lifetime. And the reason I use that here is if you just give somebody a device and say, here, use it, you're just giving them a device and they're going to have to use it. And when they can't use it anymore because it's old or it doesn't work anymore, they have to rely on somebody else to figure it out. If a person learns how these devices work and learns how to build these devices, even if it's not something that they want to do all the time, but it's a skill set that they can add to themselves, they might be able to get themselves out of a jam every once in a while. They might be able to fix a problem of their own. They might be able to give somebody else some information to help them fix an issue. So you're spreading the knowledge and you're moving that along. And I think that's a very important distinction. I think that's a very important thing. And that's where a lot of the DIY comes into play.
I'm still sad that you like kicked Apple to the curb for a few minutes there.
Well, you know, Apple's a unique case. Yeah. Cell phones in general are a unique case because, as I mentioned before, there are some companies that are trying to do the whole modular phone thing. I'll be honest with you. The ones that I've seen, they're just not that good. Because again, it takes a lot of sophistication to put these phones together.
Yeah. Well, one thing that really kills me is when the new Apple product comes out, people go out and they buy all the iPhones and the Apple Watches and the new MacBook, and they take them apart. I'm like, I could never imagine taking apart an Apple Watch. I mean, yeah, there's some people are really good at that. No, that's not me. So we are two bald nerds. Danny is more of a tinkerer than I am. I'm like, no, I'm not going to take anything apart. I go back to the professionals, and I will pay the premium to Apple because I know they know what they're doing. Plus, if I take it back to Apple and they screw it up, then they make it right. You go to Big Bubba, my friend Big Bubba, and he screws up. He goes, well, I did my best, you know.
Big Bubba.
Just make sure that wherever you take your products, make sure you do your due diligence. Don't shop on price. If they're Apple certified, that means they've been trained by Apple. It's okay to take your Apple products there, but it's a really big deal. Same with Samsung, same with Google. Make sure that they're Google or Samsung certified or Micro certified. Don't take it because, oh yeah, my name's Dan. I tinker around. Because Danny may know what he's doing, but he may not know what he's doing. And you want to make sure, because if Danny messes up your computer, now you have to go back to someone else and cost you more money. Just use your common sense. So great episode, Danny. Thank you for doing most of the talking today, the heavy lifting. I really appreciate that. I encourage everyone to go Google the Daisy Robot on YouTube to see this thing in action. It is pretty cool. Now, you know, we should think about, Danny, about having a way that someone could get in touch with us, because I got a feeling that people want to know, how can I get in touch with the two bald nerds? If only there was an idea. Can you think of an idea that they might be able to use?
You know, we are two bald nerds. You'd think we would have thought of this already. We need like a WhatsApp group or something.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Hey, you know what? Actually, we have a WhatsApp group.
Allegedly.
It's there. It's just very quiet.
Tumbleweeds.
So, yes, we do have a WhatsApp group. If you go on WhatsApp and you search for the number 2, bald, B-A-L-D, nerds, spelled with a Z, or
Z,
as they say over the across the pond, I should say. You will find the Two Bald Nerds WhatsApp group. You can ask to join. Mark or I could let you in, or would let you in. We would gladly let you in, because right now it's just Mark and I. And we could banter back and forth. You could suggest show topics. If you find something that is wrong with anything that we said, you can correct us there. Stop in just to say hi. Give us, again, like I said, suggestions, you know. Whatever. We just want to get that. We want to try to get that community kind of going, and we can't get the community growing without you guys getting in. We can pop in there and talk amongst ourselves, but then we're just talking two bald nerds, the two bald nerds. We talk enough as it is. You have no idea how much we talk amongst ourselves.
Yeah, we got a Snap Street going, and there's WhatsApp and all kinds of good stuff. So yep. Check us out, and please share this episode if it served you. If someone else is in the DYI or even remotely interested, all the podcast player make it really, really easy to share the episode. Just click the share icon and click on messages, type in your friend's name and hit send and have them give a listen. We really appreciate it. So we'll be back with another episode. I said I, because my next topic is my choice. And next week we're going to talk about dun, 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 NFTs. What are NFTs?
NFTs.
Gary Vaynerchuk says it's the future. We're all going to have NFTs, whether you want to or not. And I will tease you by saying this. The people who said, nobody will ever use QR codes. And then the pandemic came and we all are using QR codes for menus and stuff. So we will all be using NFTs. I'll be going through talking about it next week. I don't know much about it, so I'm going to do my research and talk about it on the next episode. Thank you so much for your time and attention. And Danny, they do have a homework assignment. And what is that?
Your homework assignment is to stay nerdy.